You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And these markets out there, of course, are always fascinating, at least to me. And we're now getting ups and downs and choppy stuff, but hey, it's moving along.
The big financial headline in Canada, of course, is the Bank of Canada chops its trend-setting rate again, and they expect to hear cheers for it should we be cheering another rate cut. I think it's the fourth one by the Bank of Canada.
That's the key question, Jim.
Yeah.
No, it's the greatest, it's one of the super blunders out there, because short-dated interest rates such as T-bills go up in the boom, and they go down in the bust. So T-bill rates going up, and then, of course, the Federal Reserve or the Bank of Canada, central banks always follow changes in market rates. They don't. They think they're creating the change, but no, they're just along for the ride. So I've written an article on it, and interest rates going up, you're in the boom, and interest rates going down, you're in the bust. And we've got a lovely chart following the 2007 peak in the stock market, and interest rates, of course, are heading down. And so we did a chart on the S&P stock market index, and I think we used the 6 month treasury bill index. And not only do they both go down after a boom, but the steepest drops in the S&P occur with the fastest drops in the T-bill rate. But man, I've just actually spent an hour this morning finding quotes about the wonderful good that's going to come with short rates going down. And it's the opposite. It's a disaster. So anyways, here they're all into it once again with this. It is just absolutely a huge blunder to get all excited about Fed cuts or Bank of Canada cuts. So now the Fed hasn't cut. They're talking about it, but the T-bill rate is down about 40 basis points from a couple of months ago, and that's in the States. So that's down enough in enough time and enough on the yield to say, hey, we've made a change to short rates declining. And and also, the stock market has been very bubbly. I mean, in June and July, you had the straight-up stuff with the Magnificent Seven and some individual stocks whose names I can't recall. And then you had, you know, often get seasonal firmness into September, and that's continued. We had a kind of a correction, but nothing much yet. But I think there's a fairly substantial correction ahead. This choppiness now could roll over into more of an intermediate decline. But in the meantime, that party in the Magnificent Seven was, it's not something that occurs all the time. I think it's once in a generation bubble phenomenon, that one. So we just have to watch it. The one thing that's a bit of a tip-off, other than T-bill rates going down is that we did a chart on the junk bonds and in price. And, of course, they have been rallying because there's absolutely no regard for risk out there. One need not even think about risk. So its price is up there. It's overbought and beginning to correct a little. So the junk bond price going down, and that would mean junk yields going up, seems to be possible soon. So both stock and low-grade bond prices are vulnerable.
Now, gold is up 38% this year. Has that brought our struggling gold juniors to life?
Yeah, they some of that. We had that list, you know, in December, and I think it's up about 25% on average. Two were dull, and one of them is up like 150%. So no, it's the list of juniors has been working out rather well, and we had a number of inquiries on that and managed to get the list out, and I think people would be quite pleased in that department because this really is a practical, business-like way of getting into the gold stocks without buying the majors or the middling-sized ones, and they will perform they make the gold, the market for gold stocks. But in a coming out of a hole such as we were in until December, you can get the bigger action will be in junior stocks. And we put together the list, I think it was 11 we had in there. And I mentioned that the last time we did this, I was sensing a good exploration market, was in 1996. And put together a list of five juniors. Well, one of them turned out to be Arequipa, and it went to $30. It was taken over with a $1.1 billion market cap. So that's why we favor the juniors, and one can still participate in them. And if somebody's interested, just let us know, and we'll give the list, yeah.
Now, with interest rates coming down for savers like myself, that's not good news.
No. What we've done is because your saver, you know, deposits or bank deposits or T-bills and whatnot are all going to go down. T-bill rates can eventually head towards zero. So what our suggestion is to go to a full bond dealer or an investment house that has a very good bond trading desk and buy some 3 to 4 year term good grade corporate bonds. You'll get a decent yield, and with say maturing at par in 3 years, you're not going to get whipsawed by the price. I mean, they mature at par. So they'll be like the 3 to 4 year. You'll get a decent return, and the price risk is not all that much. So, but as I say, you have to deal with a full broker who has a bond trading desk and all that sort of stuff. But now, for Canadians, if you can get the same good grade corporates 3 to 4 years, American ones, then whatever you get out of it is going to be in U.S. dollars when possibly the Canadian dollar might be weak relative to the U.S. So that's an intriguing play too, yeah?
Now,
that's going to make more money than in the stock market.
Now, I find an interesting trend here with the banks and credit unions competing for deposits. Oh, we'll give you 5%, but only if you're a new customer. I'm going, but I'm currently a customer of this company, and you're giving me 1.1%. Should I take out my account and then come back a week later and say, hey, I'm new?
Yeah, a good point there. No, all accounts have to be treated the same. That's bad business, that one.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoyt. Our first headline comes from The Times. The next commodity super cycle, are we in or about to enter a new commodity super cycle?
Yeah, they're going on about this super cycle. The permabulls in commodities, who have no understanding of it. For them, inflation is in things. Like if you drop it and it'll hit your foot, you know it. But they don't understand inflation in financial assets, that bond prices can become highly inflated and stock prices highly inflated. So here's the way it works, is you have a long period of economic expansion, then it goes crazy, you have a major countries involved in a war, and funding it with inflation, and you have a burst of inflation, like in 1919 to 1920, and then you get the global crash in commodities, and then a decade later you get the big stock market bubble, as in 1929. The previous one was 1873, and it was the same pattern. And then once the stock bubble is, the financial bubble is over, then you go into a serious contraction. The first use of the term Great Depression was written by British economists in 1880. That bubble had peaked in 1873. And then they kept looking at this continuing weakness and found it unusual. So one writer wrote it up as, called it the Great Depression. And that Great Depression lasted till 1895. And then you had a long recovery. And then you got into the 1914-18 war with inflation, and then a decade later, the stock market thing, and then boom, into another Great Depression. So what we're looking at here is that the huge boom, oh yeah, on commodities, these guys are looking for a super cycle. I would suggest that it happened already, and it can be done academically. In 2008, as commodities were flying, remember, crude oil got up to $147. We were watching the deflated price of base metals, and deflated it by the producer price index, and we had those numbers back for 100 years. And so whether it was lead or copper, it doesn't matter, they all did it. Deflated by the PPI, there were huge gains. I mean, really big. Nothing on it that was anywhere near on a 100-year chart. So here we are. And then, so you had the really big one in 08, the hit. And then the next advance in commodities in 2011, and it didn't get nearly as high. And here's the other proof. A decade later, we're getting a massive financial bubble with huge speculation in bond prices and stock prices. And as the pattern goes, once the speculation in stocks and bonds is over, boom, you go into a severe contraction. And we could call it a Great Depression. So These guys who are always looking for a commodity super cycle need to do more research.
Another headline that seems pretty positive: America is entering a new economic super cycle. That's from the Business Insider.
Yeah, they're off on super cycles, aren't they? Yeah. When a probable Great Depression is next. Yeah.
Now, why would you think they say we're entering a new economic super cycle for the U.S. when other people are predicting a recession?
Oh, I don't know what was behind the writer's thinking. They saw what was going on and concluded it was a, well, one article was that it was a new commodity super cycle. Hmm. That was October 18th. Then on October 21st, we get Business Insider on a new economic super cycle. You can't explain it. They just wrote it. That's all I was interested in was the headline.
Well, I'm thinking perhaps it might even be connected to all the major storms that have hit the southern U.S. this year. That's a lot of building you have to do. That's a lot of construction. That's a lot of jobs. You know, after a major disaster.
Said 1926, too, yeah. When that hurricane destroyed much of Florida. Mm-hmm. No, it's just a wonderful bullish headline.
Yeah, because from Zhanghao, we have 17 indicators of global recession are clanging. The alarm bells are going off. Whoop, whoop,
yeah,
whoop.
Yeah, well, that's in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But again, the U.S. economy, which is 25% of the world's economy, you know, so how the U.S. goes, especially for Canada and Mexico, is how we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the U.S. economy is probably soon to start a recession.
Now, after U.S. presidential elections, Bob, traditionally do the markets have like a 4 to 6 week happy time no matter who wins, and then we see economic fallout after that?
Yeah, there's a number of studies on that, but I don't pay much attention to it. More than likely, Trump will win, but it's already in the market. I saw a headline the other day where the analyst said that if Trump wins, that would set things up for the S&P to get to 15,000.
Yeah.
So, and no, the stock market at times can be very sophisticated, and it's probably already priced in a Trump win. So,
Japan's 40-year yield rises to its highest level since 2008.
Yeah, well, 2008 was the global financial crisis when yields were high. And here we are. Their yields are high. So, you know, it's all part of heading towards another financial crisis.
Hmm. And, of course, their interest rates were negative for a while, where they wanted you to get rid of your money.
Oh, yeah. They had negative nominal rates, which is, that's never happened before in history.
Now, this goes back to after the Second World War, where the Japanese didn't trust big banks because they all collapsed. And so many Japanese homes have a hidden safe where they put their money because they still don't trust the banks.
Yeah.
So the interest rate really doesn't matter to them. They just want to keep what they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
The IMF warns China's property market worsening as it cuts country's growth outlook.
Yeah, this is it. The erosion of prices is the problem, and they had a very speculative real estate market, and the speculative real estate market is unwinding. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that when the dust settles in the communist government in Beijing, who have probably been living well with this financial bubble, I think they're going to be probably thrown out of office. And I think Hong Kong will still be a power, a focal point, And maybe Hong Kong could do a reverse takeover and take over Beijing. Because those southern provinces of China were more influenced by Hong Kong and Taiwan than they were by Beijing. So now you've had, you know, 50 years of building a great financial market and a great bubble and real estate and huge numbers of apartment buildings. And, you know, they've had the full thing. So, a crash is coming. Well, China is in the early stages of a crash.
Now, Brazil's Lula urges BRICS to create alternative payment methods. That would be the unit,
yeah,
which would be worth roughly, read at this interview, about $24 U.S. Vladimir Putin introduced a symbolic unit at their meeting in Kazan, Russia, the meeting of the BRICS. But that doesn't mean it's active or being used. It was symbolic. Do you think it's ever going to happen for real? 40% backed by gold.
Here's my view on it, Jim, is that they've been talking about it for years. And the first talk was that the BRIC currency would be convertible into gold and into commodities. And into commodities is just dead wrong. Those guys didn't have a clue what they were talking about. And yes, it'd be great to have a BRIC into convertible into gold, but I fully expect the U.S. dollar, when full financial reform comes in, the U.S. dollar will be put convertible into gold, and it's the only way you can prevent the central bankers from being reckless. Is go put the currency on a gold standard. And I think the U.S. will eventually go on to a gold standard.
Canada and the U.K. sold off all of their gold holdings at bargain prices several years ago. We don't know if the U.S. has any gold at all at Fort Knox. And yet Russia and China have been piling up gold for the last 12 years at least. A big mistake by Canada not to have gold reserves?
Yeah, but they were forced. It was the 87 LTCM, long-term capital management crisis, and some country central bank was short of gold, so they persuaded Canada to get into the group of seven. They had to sell the gold.
Oh.
The most practical thing is to have any currency backed with gold convertibility. It keeps the central bankers honest. And this is where the BRICS people, their idea of having a convertible is online. But they won't be able to dent the trade that's going on in the U.S. dollar. It takes huge time and huge events to make the transition, because in the 1500s, Antwerp was the financial center and the Dutch guilder was the coin. And then about 1720, 1730, London had eclipsed Antwerp, and sterling became the senior currency. And then sort of like osmosis in the late 20s and 1930s, then it transitioned to New York being the financial center and the dollar being the senior currency. And I don't see anything at this instant that would suggest that the U.S. dollar is no longer going to be the senior currency. And, of course, part of this stuff behind the BRICS is, like, for example, Argentina owes a whole bunch of dollars due and payable on debt in New York. So, of course, they do not want to they don't like it, because going from trying to service debt from a weak currency into a firm senior currency is a very difficult thing. And as I've said many times, Gresham was Queen Elizabeth the first financial agent in the Antwerp market in the 1550s. And his letters outlined the problems of trying to service debt from a weak currency into the firm senior currency. And so that's what it's about. So this is where, using again Argentina as an example, they now don't like the debt burden, whereas when it was party time, they had no problem taking it on. It's classic. It's been going on for centuries.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Jim, I enjoy it, and we look forward to next week.
What are you going to dress up as for Halloween?
I got my daughter. I saw it on the internet, and it's sort of made with a cushiony fabric kind of stuff. And the front of it, you put it on, and then you put your face is at a hole at the top, and then there's hole for your arms to come out. And it's a replica of the picture of the Mona Lisa. So when she looks, puts this on with her face in the hole opening, she looks like the full Mona Lisa painting. It's fun. Me? No, I won't be putting on any costume. What about your end? What are you going to do?
Still haven't decided yet, but I do have long, stringy hair, and I'm balding, so maybe Beetlejuice.
Although that
and I can do the voice.
That would be good. We hope that everybody has a fun Halloween.
If you have any questions for Bob or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.